Welcome everyone. After the break, I would like to introduce you Mr. Sean Merdinger, and the topic of his lecture is "We don't need no stinking badges, hacking electronic door access controllers." Let's start.
Okay, thank you very much. Welcome everyone. You may be wondering where the title of this presentation comes from, and this is a classic American movie, and you'll hear this a lot, so we don't need no stinking badges, and I wanted to play this video clip for you, just so you can get an idea. So this comes from a movie called The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, and it's from 1948 with Humphrey Bogart. So here's the scene where you hear the stinking badges.
Estoy chadita.
Oiga, señor, we are federales, you know, the mountain police.
If you're the police, where are your badges?
Badges? We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Better not come any closer.
No sea tonto, hombre. We didn't try to do you any harm. Why don't you try to be a little more polite? Give us your gun, and we leave you in peace.
I need my gun myself.
Oh, throw that old iron over here. We'll pick it up and go on our way.
You go anyway without my gun and go quick.
So just a quick little kickoff there. All right, so let's get things going here. First of all, I just wanted to say this is a great conference. I was very fortunate to speak here a few years ago. And it is a great honor to be back here. So thank you so much for bringing me back. And it's also great to travel. I love travel. I love getting out of the United States. Love my country, but it's always important to see the rest of the world. So not enough Americans travel. I really like the speaker lineup. I've seen some great talks in between recovering from all the vodka. So it is very dangerous. This is a wonderful city. It's just so old and there's so much to see, it just rocks. And just a special note here too, I speak at several conferences and this is the best as far as taking care of speakers. So I really want to make sure that I make that point because taking care of speakers, you know, we talk amongst each other and it's... we'll say, well, which conference takes the best care of us and who picks us up at the airport and brings us a hotel and the dinner and the parties. And it's just been so much and so great. So just a special thank you to the conference staff for this. And this is from last night. I don't know if you recognize this person, but she is a very, very dangerous individual. And so you want to be very careful. That's that vodka was I like the first one that we had, which was the clear one. So this was a little much like cough syrup for me, but still quite tasty nonetheless. Okay, so today I'm going to be talking about electronic door access controllers, and what these are typically when you have an employee identification badge, you'll badge into a door. Well, there's been a lot of research and exploits that people have done against the actual readers themselves. So those are RFID. And what I'm talking about is the back-end system. So this is an embedded system where all of this information flows to and that actually controls the doors. So it's not standing in front of a door, attacking the door. This is coming over the network. And from my research, nobody has talked about this side yet. So it's all just been, what can I do when I'm looking at the door, and how can I attack it? So I refer to these as EDACs for short. And today I'm going to talk about the trends and the landscape, some of the major vendors and the architecture. And really what's going to make this drive this presentation home is a real-world analysis and real bugs and real vulnerabilities in a pretty major product. This is it's called a S2 Security, and it's a United States company, but they're expanding. They have offices in Canada and Great Britain, a couple other places too. So Much of this, since it's an embedded device, is transferable knowledge that you can use to any other embedded device. The type of techniques and the approach that I use, it's portable. But what you want to do is, the takeaway from this is to just try to bring a broader mindset and say, oh, okay, I could use this for another type of system too. So what kind of exposure, what kind of vulnerabilities, how do you attack this, countermeasures, so what can you do to defend it? I make some recommendations, and then hopefully if I have time, I'll go into some of the later research that I hope to do. So today you're going to learn, these are the objectives and the outcomes, and you're going to learn about some of the security issues, the major vendors, I talked about that. This third point here, which is the marketing versus reality, you'll see a lot of vendors will make these marketing statements saying, you know, our device is rock solid, it's very secure, you can put this anywhere, you can't hack it. We all know that's not the case. Anything can be attacked. Anything can be hacked. It's just a matter of time. You're going to walk out of here today with specific pen testing knowledge. So if you're going out into the field and you come across one of these devices, you're going to be able to use standard tools like Nmap to identify and be able to write up in your final report your findings and what these issues are. And again, like I said before, I want you to walk out of here with tangible kind of first stage, first step testing methods and research methods. Some of this isn't always technical. Some of it's reading, doing some research, finding out what is available on this on a particular company or a product, much more than just what they say on their marketing website. Finally, I have a paper coming. It's just been a matter of I'm still coordinating with CERT, which is the U.S. One of the U.S. Computer Emergency Response Team organizations. And the old days, 5 years ago, I used to just go out and speak at a conference, and I'd drop O-Day. Nothing too serious, but it was O-Day still. And things have changed very much with the laws and the rules, and I don't do that anymore. So everything that I'll talk about is known and published, mostly. I have to bring a little bit of an edge to this. So I do have some more pipe bugs in the pipeline with CERT, and that will be coming in the final paper. So a few quotations here, and this gets into the kind of the marketing speak. And this top one here is, when hackers put viruses on your home computer, it's a nuisance. When they unlock doors at your facility, it's a nightmare. Now, this quotation comes from John Moss, who is the CEO of S2 Security, which is the box, the device that I'm going to talk about today. And this is the kind of thing that I want to point out, that you know these companies and these people in these companies will make these statements. And then you, as a researcher or a security practitioner or whatever your role is in the field, you can use these as almost ammunition against them and say, well, you said this, and then I see this. What do you have to say about that? And most of the time, they won't have very much to say. This second quotation comes from an interview with Attorney General Janet Reno. And this is way back in 2000, so 10 years ago. Just to give you a little background, Attorney General is the highest lawyer in the United States government. So what happened was is they, another government organization did a penetration test, a physical penetration test on her office. And they actually got people into her office, into the conference room, looking into her office. And then they brought it out and they said, you know, this was a physical penetration test. Were you able to get this far? What do you think about it? And that last line there is, anytime I think you expose vulnerabilities, it's a good thing. And so that's the kind of inspiration that it gives to me to actually talk about this stuff, because it can get a little scary sometimes. You never know who's going to come knocking on your door. It's happened. Okay, so I'm going to dive right into the EDAC technology. So what we're seeing is a trend from IP protocols, towards IP protocols from proprietary solutions. So what I'm talking about is these guys and these companies will develop their own systems, their own protocols, and then they use it. And what they're trying to do is bring a convergence together of bringing IP, video, bringing LDAP for, say, access control on files and systems, personnel management, bringing this all together and tying it all together. And the goal that some of these companies have is that when a new employee comes in, they enter their name and their information in one place, and then it propagates out. So your badge works, your email works, you've got your business cards are ordered automatically. Everything is streamlined. What comes with this is a lot of cost savings with this integration. So we're seeing HVAC systems, which is heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. So what controls your environment, your buildings, is actually getting tied into these systems. Elevators, your burglar alarms. Another thing that's happening is they're utilizing power over Ethernet to power the doors. So this is the actual locking mechanism on a door. Now, if you think about that, if you just run one cable, an Ethernet cable, you can use that Ethernet cable to power the door, and then you don't have to run two wires, a dedicated power wire. It's a lot of money savings there, and it also saves a lot of time. Most of these systems you'll see are using embedded Linux or some variant of that, or VxWorks. And there's many vendors in this space, many more than that I have listed here. But some of the big ones are, of course, S2 and Honeywell. Cisco Systems recently got into the space, too, with an acquisition by Richard Zeta. And then you'll see another big one down here is Linnell. And then HID. So you may have seen some of these companies. So in the field, when these are deployed in buildings, what you'll really see is they're managed by facilities people. So they don't bring IT people in. And this picture here is a typical facilities person. You know, they're not a technical person. What they do is they do doors, and they do ventilation, and they do, you know, heating and stuff like that. They're not IT folks. And what they do is they'll put these in a wiring closet, and it gets installed, and then it's forgotten about. And it's just some web interface that they go to and use, and they don't think about the system. They can be in there for 10, 5, 10, even 15 years for some of these. And what I've encountered in different organizations is they don't want to deal with IT and then the building and the facilities people. They say, you know, physical security, it's our domain, we own it, you know, it's not yours, even though this is networked. And then they'll say, you know, you ask them questions about, well, how do you patch this and how do you upgrade it and what's maintenance windows? You get, huh, what? Well, we just let the vendor deal with that, or we have a third-party integrator who deals with that. And then, you know, the corporate policies regarding passwords and logging typically don't apply to these systems. So it all gets outsourced. It all goes to the third party. So this is the picture of the actual device from S2 Security. And what you see here is the network controller. And that's this single card here. And it's an embedded system. It has a couple Ethernet controllers there. And then this is just running out to power there. So it's a single board. I mean, it's an embedded device. It's, when you look at it, it's not much to look at. But it has a lot of features, and it has a lot of components on there. So what you'll see is, what you'll see is that they'll say that you can manage this with a web browser from anywhere on the network. Here's a broader overview of the architecture. And so that device on the previous slide is this right here. And then they might have an expansion module going on another facility. So this is a completely different building. And then they might have another facility here. So just, you know, this box here could be in control of 5, 10, 15 buildings. Just because it's not a one-to-one. And you'll see, the integration here of bringing in the video cameras, okay, and here's another video camera, and then it'll have some storage, DVRs, digital video recorders as well. So it's an integration, and it's all going on to the corporate network. So this is the device, and right now there's about 9,000 of these systems that they've sold. And they're all over the place. Their major market is schools, specifically in the United States, high schools and secondary schools, some colleges, hospitals, lots of businesses, and I've even come across some in police stations and firehouses as well, fire stations. So, I mean, very sensitive areas that these get deployed in. What's also interesting is this same device is sold under multiple brand names. So the people who make it are S2 Security. And then there's a distributor called Lanier, and they're out in California. And then they rebrand this as eMERGE 50 and 500, two different appliances. Then you have a major company like Sonitrol, who in the United States is a third party, and they provide security services and remote monitoring. Well, they take this and they package it up and then they sell it as a service. So they install this box in your organization and then they manage it remotely. So the picture here that I want you to see is that, you know, just because you have this one device, it could be under multiple names and even different labels. So it can be a challenge to figure out how many there are and who is involved with it. So just for some background information here, part of this, and this ties back to what I was saying, how you can take your research and apply it to any system. When you're doing your preparation and your information gathering, you know, you want to go into your state case studies from the company's product and look at their press releases. A lot of marketing crap in there, but it's important because you want to get the full picture. Google is not good enough. I'm fortunate right now because I work at the University of Florida. So it's a major United States university. We have a lot of access and library access to databases. So LexisNexis, anybody here use LexisNexis at all? And I see a couple hands. ABI Inform, what these are huge commercial databases that are very expensive to use. But if you're a student or an employee at a university, or you can get access to it, in the United States, you can just walk onto a campus and use a library and use many of these resources. So from a simple research, from one marketing statement, and I have this tiny URL up there, this is a press release between MySQL and S2 Security, and they put this press release together. And what I was able to determine just from this one press release of all these different things that they're using, these different components. So, I see. They have Samba, they use MySQL. This Linneo Linux distribution is the same one that's on that little Zorus handheld from, you know, several years ago. This next piece was very important. So it only took them 15 months from when they first designed this to when they first sold it to customers. Now, what that tells me is that the old line is, you know, you want fast, cheap, or high quality, pick two. what's interesting about this is that, you know, they did not have much prior experience with open source. This gives me a lot of insights, like, okay, these guys are moving fast, they really don't know the in-depth, they're not building their own kernel, they're not as familiar with open source as they should be. This last bullet here was MySQL is used to store everything. From reports to user information, the facility diagrams, everything goes into that MySQL database. So what that tells me is that, okay, if I'm going to target something, I want to get to that database. Because if I get to that database, I get the keys to the kingdom, I own the box, and then I can expand my access to other areas. Again, so here's some of the marketing statements that, and this is directly off of the S2 website. And they say, you know, the data security features built into this make it safe to deploy across any network, even the internet. That's a very bold statement. You know, if you're going to tell me that you're good enough to make a device that you can stick on the internet and have anybody in the world come and attack it, and you're confident in that, I'm going to take you up on that. remote locations are easily handled. So that indicates to me that they're okay with telling their customers, oh, you can put this on a public IP address space. And this last one is, it can operate for years without any kind of maintenance. Come on. So that tells me right away, well, there's obviously no antivirus on this. It's an embedded system, so it's, you know, the very small resources. It doesn't have the capability to do that. But come on, and we know this, right? There's no way that you can have any type of computing system out there that is maintenance-free. Unless it's totally disconnected from any networking and it's just a standalone dedicated device, you know, maybe you can get away with that. But if you're going to say that, you know, you can put this on the internet and you're not going to have to maintain it, I'm going to call bullshit on that. You know, and that's exactly what I did with these guys. So getting into some components here. So we have this box. Well, what's going on with it, right? What do we have? What kind of services are running on there? How do we access it? And what are these features? So we look. So here's the HTTP web server. So this uses Go Ahead Web Server, which is, in my opinion, a bad choice. Now, what's kind of interesting is that this is an open source web server. You can download this. It's free. You can go to Go Ahead and just grab this and download the source code and the binaries. But the problem is that there's many vulnerabilities which have been published about this web server, and I'm not seeing very many fixes at all. So I've seen a couple of patches that people have done, but that means you've got to recompile it, and you have to do all that extra work. And really, this is the kind of statement that catches my eye, which is they were contacted by a security researcher on three different occasions. No response back from them. But again, you go to the website and they say, hey, it's a great web server, download it, it's free, it's open source. Just because it's open source doesn't mean that it's maintained, certainly doesn't mean that it has robust security. Again, here's another quotation from the CEO of the company. And he wrote this in an article saying, you know, data security, it's a real challenge. Unfortunately, some people haven't risen to that challenge. So by the inference that you take from that is, well, you know, we're doing our stuff right, and these guys out here aren't doing it right. And that's just not the case. So what I've got here is this is a plot of TCP SYN ISNs, right? So the initial sequence number. And what you can see here is that this is not a very random distribution of SYNs. So this is just one small piece of, you know, where you can go with this type of evaluation. But this tells you, you know, that for as far as session hijacking goes, obviously it's, you know, there's some room in there where you can perform that type of attack. Now this paper here, I highly recommend it, and there's a tiny URL there. And just for a little background, I worked for Cisco for almost 5 years, and I did in-house product security testing. This paper that we published, and it's not on Cisco's site anymore, but it is out there, and it is, you can still get it, and that URL will take you to it. This will give you a stack evaluation how-to. It'll give you a roadmap of, you can take this paper, get your tools together, and just go through this paper step by step. And it has this kind of stuff in here where you do your sequence plotting for ISNs. This makes for nice reports, but it also gives you tremendous insight into what kind of weaknesses having these systems can have. Any questions so far? Everybody's hungover, huh? I'll liven this up. We've got some good stuff coming up. So this is the MySQL database. And, you know, it's listening on TCP 3306, right? So that's a problem right away. And then I saw it, and I was like, wow, this is kind of outdated. And I was like, version 4.0. I mean, that sounds old. I went to MySQL to go download it. If you see here, because version 4.0 of MySQL Server are in such low demand, we have decided to stop hosting binaries of these older versions. I mean, end of life, forget about it. I mean, the end of download. You know, you can't even go out and download this from MySQL. Yet this isn't a production system that they say you can put on the internet, not maintain, and it's going to be secure. That's just wrong. I mean, everybody's got to do some marketing. I understand that you need to push your products, but you know, that's just so wrong to do that. And once I saw that, I mean, that really kind of got me fired up to go after this box some more. This NetBox component here, this is a custom service that they developed. S2 coded this daemon up. This is on TCP 7362. And what it does is it performs multicast discovery of the HID nodes. So what those HID nodes are, those are the little box on the outside of your door, and that's when you badge in. So this will do auto discovery of that, which really seems kind of weird to me, because why would you want to do auto discovery of that? You should know exactly where those are and what they are. And really, from an attacker standpoint, what happens if I flood your network or I respond to that multicast request with, say, yeah, I've got one over here, or I've got 10,000. And what happens to your box when it comes back with 10,000 of these responding? So they were issued a U.S. patent on this. And now what's interesting about patent, and this goes back to doing your research and doing your reading, is it's all out there. They have to publish this with the patent office. And you can read through this, and it's a step-by-step detailed specifications. It's almost like an RFC. You know, you almost want to read it and do searches for, you know, must not. And then you start doing your attacks based on that. So from a fuzzing standpoint, you know, this is the first thing that I would just fuzz the hell out of, no question about. And then go into those other attacks that I talked about as far as spoofing responses back or trying to add your own custom controller or your own node to the system. So now we get into like FTP and Telnet. I mean, here we are, 2010, right? I mean, we're still talking about FTP and Telnet. And this is a critical security device. And this opens the doors to your building. Now, this quotation on the bottom here, you'll see, we see some vendors fitting their serial devices with Telnet adapters, which simply sit on a network transmitting unsecured serial data. This is the CEO of the company, right, telling you this. But then he's got Telnet and FTP going on his box. Like, well, you're doing it too. If you're going to do it, you know, step up to it and own it. What you'll see is HTTP by default. They don't even enable SNL, TLS. And then you got, you know, Telnet to manage this with the command line. And then FTP for device backups. FTP, okay, you know, if you got to use it, you got to use it. But if you're going to tell people to use it, document it right. This is a screenshot here from the documentation, and it tells you to create a username, password, and directory for the security system FTP backups, right? A password is optional, and the backup directory must be created at root level on your FTP server. Oh, come on, I mean, that's just not right. No. Okay. Getting back into some other components here, like I mentioned before, you've been seeing a lot of features added to these. And you'll see here, these are the various licenses that you have for this particular product version. And it's a demonstration license, but you know, there's a badge, a burglar, application interface, elevator, floor plans, ODBC, photo, temperature, and then I'm not sure what this VMS is. I don't think that's, you know, the VMS that we're all thinking of. It must be an acronym for something else. And then VoIP. I mean, why in the heck would you use voice over IP in a system like this? Are you going to call it up and say, let me into door C22 or code it in? I don't know. And by the way, I don't actually have this device. I had access to it for about a week where Sonatrol came in to my company that I was working at that time and said, we'd like to sell you this. And I said, great, I want to look at that box before we put it on our network. And I told them I was going to break it. And I told them if I broke it, I was going to take it to security conferences. And they were laughing at me, saying, you're not going to be able to find anything on this. It's like, oh, okay. Okay. Thank you. It gets worse, okay, because they've got two demos online on the internet. So I did all my follow-up testing and verification on their online demos. It's like really subversive. I mean, this is, you know, using their own equipment against them, using their own demos against them. It's not the way I like to play, but if I need to play dirty and rough, I'll do it. What happens, I mean, when you've got these features, you know, it increases your complexity, right? We all know this. It increases your attack surface. You know, if you've got voice over IP coming into a device like this, that's a whole nother set of worries that you need to have. So, building maps. How cool is this, right? You can upload your GIF or PNG or whatever, and you've actually got your building map of your organization. So it's almost like Jack Bauer with, you know, 24. Okay, send it to my screen, you know, or upload it to my PDA. But that kind of capability gives people, you know, a lot of insight into your device. So here's the first thing I found. And I said, okay, you know, I've got a problem with your box. Basically, I can reset it to factory defaults. That means, you know, it wipes everything. It wipes all your configuration. Those 250 to 1,000 employees that you had to key in manually, that's all gone. Your doors, ding, 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 they're not working, you know. They pushed back on me and they said, oh, well, the doors will work, but, you know, there won't get updates and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, no, it's not working. I don't know what you guys are talking about. And it was really a pain in the neck here was, you know, I went to S2 security first and I emailed them and I said, look, can I get a security point of contact and a PGP key? And they got back to me. They didn't get back to me. Finally, I had to call one of their guys up, and he said, oh, well, you know, we don't handle the security problems with the device. You got to go talk to Lanier. So Lanier's the company out in California that they resell this to. And I was like, man, this is a nuisance. Then I called Lanier up, and he's, oh, well, you know, that's an S2 product, so you're going to have to talk to S2 about that. I was like, you know what, screw you guys. I'm just going to go to CERT. And that's what I did, and I contacted CERT, CC, not US CERT. And specifically, Art Mannion and Will Dorman are two CERT analysts, and they did a great job working with me on this. Now, the problem is that had these guys dealt with me as a human being, right, and a customer, I probably wouldn't be here today. This vulnerability would not get published, would not have been published. And then, if you do a search for S2 security on Google, right? Here's the S2 security search. First hit, second hit, third hit for your company is a product vulnerability that I found. That's bad, right? I mean, it looks bad to your customers. It you know, people don't appreciate that. So I'm okay with that. I mean, I would have been okay with just sharing this with them and getting it fixed and not doing a vulnerability. I'm not trying to get rich. I'm not trying to get famous. But I gotta get a slideshow here. You know, but I do expect to be treated with respect when I come to you in a professional manner and say, I found a product vulnerability in your product and I'd like to report it. You know, well, you gotta treat people right. So really, if any of you are with companies and you're developing products, the lesson to learn from this is that you want to have a security point of contact. You should have a / security page in your website, and you should have a PGP key up there, and you should just say, yeah, we're interested in working with people to resolve any problems that we find in our devices. You don't want the third hit on Google to be a government publication about a vulnerability in your device. So this is what I found next. And this is, you know, by this time they weren't really happy with me and they weren't talking with me a whole lot. So everything was just going to CERT. US CERT published this, but I was actually dealing with CERT CC. And there's a pretty major distinction between those two organizations. US CERT's only been around since 2003. CERT CC, which is out of Carnegie Mellon University, was established in 1988 after the Morris worm hit. So those guys are really old school. They've been around and they have a lot of contacts. So what's the problem here? Well, the problem is that, and again, you know, my elite tools that I used for this, a web browser and my brain. That's it. I mean, there's nothing sexy here. So, sorry. But, it is a very serious impact. So you can download an attacker with just a web browser and knowing the URL. Now, I'm not going to give you the URL. You can find it. You can figure it out. But they can download the database backups. So it's in a compressed .dar. And then what you have here is a file name that has a predictable naming convention. So this is a hard-coded cron job that does this. So if you know the naming convention that this uses, and you know that a box is an S2 box, you can figure it out and just rotate through and pull their database backups. And what do you have? Well, remember that previous document, that S2 security and the MySQL document that they published? They said everything is in there, right? Your building diagrams, your camera information, all your employees, everything's in the database. Well, if I got your backup, I got the whole system. So let's see what we can find in that database. So, admin credentials. Okay, MySQL 64-bit hash. And this is hilarious because they came back to me. I said, I got your unencrypted database access here. And the guy came back and goes, oh, well, that's, really hard to read, and you're not going to be able to find that information in there, and blah, blah, blah. And I came back the next day, and I was like, here, here's your hash. Again, the communications at that point started really just dropping low. So you can plug this into, passwordcrack.ru or com or whatever it is, and it cracks the hash, and now you have admin access to the web interface or the telnet interface. Great. What can we do? Well, how about open any door in your building, right? Or schedule it for later, 2 a.m. You'll see here, here's the stairwell doorways, and then here's an office, and here's the elevators. And what really is kind of interesting, in America, we don't care about privacy anymore, right? Because it's all dead. We're just screwed. But over here in Europe, you guys still have a chance with privacy. And, the privacy concerns that can come up out of this is, okay, if you have a smoker's area like this here, well, who in your organization smokes? Is it impacting their productivity? Do they not get a raise because they use this, because they have more than 3 cigarettes a day? Or is there a concern about their productivity? And really, I don't know of any legislation stuff or, legal guidelines that deal with this. Can you use your building door access and bring that into a policy of your human resources? And can you say, well, we're going to charge you more for health insurance in the U.S., you got to pay a lot for health insurance. Are we going to charge you more for health insurance because you're a smoker? It opens up a lot of doors, literally. So what we have here is, this is also in the database, okay? And now I control your IP cameras, right? Which are all over your facility, and now I have here's the camera name, and this is from a live system, so I had to delete some of it. IP address, the port it's listening, and then here's your admin and then password on one of the cameras. excuse me. Sort of. So what's interesting about this is now the attacker owns the IP cameras. And this statement here, this quotation, is from a manager in Bosch Security, which also makes a door access controller system. And what's interesting, he says, most hackers don't care about watching your lobby. If they gain access to the network, they're going to go after financial data and trade secrets. I don't know what this guy is talking about, because I'd love to watch your lobby. Okay. And especially if I want to come in and go after your financial data and trade secrets, how about I open the door at 2 a.m. after looking there and seeing that no one's in your lobby, and I go in and I take the server, right? I mean, you take the whole box, and then see what their backup plan is. Okay, so digital video recorders, what these are archive systems. So if the cameras, the IP cameras are taking pictures, and then they push those images to a digital video recorder. Well, at this point, what you're looking at is, you know, you can get the DVR user pass from the backup database. But really, you don't even have to go that far, because if you just go to their documentation here, and this is a screenshot, they say, create a user, right? The eMERGE defaults to the username IEI eMERGE and a password eMERGE. We recommend that you use these defaults. Okay? In fact, I'm heading to PH after this, and I need to mention this to FX and get it in Phenolit's default password list, because that's a great resource. But really, you know, it's very sad to see this, that you know, a security company, physical security, which is so important, and bringing in third-party products and integrating them to them, but then, you know, because of that breakdown there, and because of poor documentation and not having a security mindset, they say, oh, well, you know, just go ahead and use those default passwords. In fact, we recommend that. So, you know, if you have a third-party integrator who's doing this, he's going to go and he's going to be looking through the manual and going step by step. Oh, okay, you know, I've got to use these, right? This is vendor recommended. So remote fingerprinting, and this is really where the rubber meets the road, right? Because, you know, there's so many IP addresses out there. This guy up here has me a little scared. Is that a public IP? Maybe, I don't know. What you can do is, this is trivial identification of the Mac. So they registered the OID of this Mac for every system that they have, right? Those first three bits there are identifiers, okay, for S2. So they registered. So, I mean, if you're scanning out a network, you can find these very easily just by identifying the MAC address. Now, with the service fingerprint, I did fingerprint this device when I scanned it, and then I sent that to Fyodor, so at Nmap. So in Nmap 5.20, there is this in the Nmap service probes. If you go and grep for Sonatrol, you'll see that here's your signature for that. So if you're doing OS fingerprinting or service fingerprinting, this Nmap will identify this device. So I try to contribute back to these tools that are wonderful and that I use every day. So Shodan. Anybody here know Shodan? Oh, you guys are going to love this. Shodan's amazing. So anyway, I went to these guys. I say, okay, you got a lot of these boxes are out here on the interwebs, okay, on that series of tubes. And they came back and said, well, you know, they should be on a firewall and, you know, only accessible via VPN, and they're, you know, they're deep within the corporate network, which means nothing to me, right? I mean, everywhere is the front line is everywhere. It's on your individual PCs, it's on your routers, it's on your firewall. Everywhere is the front line. There is no layers, in my opinion. So they said, you know, that these boxes are hard to find. Well, Shodan is basically, think of it like a computer search engine. And think of it as rainbow tables for systems that are on the internet. So this individual has built this website. He goes out and scans all of these IPs. He gets the fingerprints for the web server, port 80, 443. He gets Telnet. And then he's brought these back into this public database that you can go in and search. So if I did a fingerprint here of the web server. So here it is. Here's the go-ahead webs. And then there's another piece here, the login. And then the no cache and a must revalidate, right? Well, you do that, and you can find 185 systems from this company on the internet right now. And I'll show you here. So this is the search. So this is Shodan. And then you see here, here's a search. And then there's 189 in the US and 4 in Canada and 1 in Italy. Raul, you can take care of that one when you get back. And then you can see here. And I'll just go ahead and click. Okay, it's loading. So you see, that's a Sonatrol E access, and there you go. There's one of the systems. okay? And then, you know, you know they are, right? I mean, you know it. You know they are. I'm not doing that, but I got to try to make it home. My mom will be very angry at me if I'm in a Polish jail. But here's another one. And you'll see that, so it's, you know, there's a Sonitrol, okay, and then they'll come up, and there's another one. Here's the S2 NetBox. So what you see here is that, like I mentioned before, that rebranding of these systems. So it could be from Sonitrol, it could be from S2, it could be from Linear, who knows. But the key here is that you gotta, you know, you have to know what you're looking for, and you have to get very specific in Shodan with the searches, okay? That there. If I just go ahead and did it, you know, do a go-ahead search, well, you see there's 210,616 go-ahead web servers that this search engine has found out there. This is a great tool, and if you're doing a penetration test on an organization, you can search by subnets and ranges. And what's really scary here is that here are some of the popular searches. Okay? Anyone here want to own a router? I mean, that's it. You know, you click that, you go there, and you can just fire it up. There's no password, no nothing. So I hear. I wouldn't know, but. You know, it's amazing that you can go ahead and do a search here. I mean, these are routers, right? I mean, this is serious infrastructure equipment here. And there's over 4,300 routers out there that you can just go and own right now. Do BGP tables, BGP peering between them, you know, redirect traffic, all kinds of stuff. That looks like Iran to me. The country flag there will tell you. Is that Iran?
India?
Sorry. Okay. Brazil? It's, Korea? Okay, we all know that one. You know. Turkey? SG.
Singapore.
Nice. Yeah. So that's very scary. But anyway, you know, this is a great tool to familiarize yourself with and use it in your own legitimate pen testing purposes. At this point, once I showed them Shodan, they really didn't talk to me anymore. That was that was pretty much it. And they said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to revamp our training that we have for our integrators. We're going to tell them not to put this on the internet. We're going to do all these good things. They told CERT that, and then CERT told me. So, but they didn't really want to talk to me much, which is, I'm a pretty nice guy. I mean, I'm just going to try to tell you like it is, that's all. So here's an example. It's an old, that's the one I just showed you. I showed you a live one. And really, this gets me thinking, well, you know, if it's got this out here, what other kinds of, you know, EDAC systems are available? This is the iGuard biometric fingerprint reader. It's actually quite popular in Asia, and we have one of these at my university, University of Florida. And I hit this box a little bit, and I didn't find anything right away. So it's not terribly bad, but still, it's pretty scary to see this kind of stuff. Okay, so this is, you know, a public IP and a fort, okay, that's indicative of a, you know, maybe a military kind of thing, okay, in the US. Obviously, you know, I've obfuscated that, but you know, it's kind of scary to see that. So really, what kind of recommendations do we have here? And this is, you know, to the vendor and the reseller, you've got to conduct security evaluations on your products. Out of this, something good has happened. I've got another vendor in this space who has contacted me, and he said, I want to have you do a security evaluation on this device. I said, fantastic, would love to. And I don't want a dime. I'm not going to take any money for it. But what I am going to do is I'm going to ask you to donate to a charity the equivalent of your coffee budget for 6 months. So what this goes back to is, you know, 10 years ago, the line was that companies spend more on their coffee than they do on their IT security. So that's 10 years ago. Now, you know, it's a completely different story, right? Companies do spend money on their security, but not in this space. So the kind of win-win here is that, and also I said that we bring in CERT. So I sign an NDA. CERT does not sign the NDA. Any of the vulnerabilities that I find in this device, I give to you and CERT, and you and CERT can figure out and talk to each other when you do it, when you publish it. I don't care if it's 6 months or a year or whenever, as long as it comes out eventually. And you give a charity 6 months of your coffee budget. So I think that works out pretty well. And really what this speaks to is, you know, these companies need to work with security researchers. You know, we're not the kind of people you want to piss off, okay? This is not good for a company to have a guy like me out here at a conference talking about your product. And it didn't have to be like this. If they were a little more forthcoming, if they were a little more straightforward with me and didn't get so defensive, none of this, you would have never heard about this. Maybe it would have been, you know, one more of the 8,000-10,000 vulnerabilities that come out every year, instead of me actually, you know, digging into them and driving this at conferences. So what they need to do is, you know, that documentation, all those clips that I showed you before are poor documentation. They need to tighten that up. They need to get, you know, more logging details. The logging is horrendous on this. I didn't even go into that. But it's so important for investigations. At Yale University last year, there was two coworkers in a lab, okay, and this is an animal lab. This coworker, he killed this doctor, okay, this woman who was working on her PhD. He murdered her in the lab and then took her body and stuffed it into a wall, okay? Nasty, right? Scary. Well, the police came in, they searched for her, they didn't find her, and then they, you know, interviewed this guy and, okay, well, you know, he's still got to take care of the animals. So he's in that building and he's taking care of these animals, but he's cleaning up his tracks and trying to cover his tracks. It wasn't until that they got to the logs for the card access that they saw, okay, she went here, he went here, she went into this room, he went into this room, and then she never came back out. Well, then they went into the logs, they got the logs of the access control device, and then they went into that room and they searched the room and they found her in the wall. You know, this it's a horrible situation, but this is the kind of thing that, you know, lives can depend on this, right? We need to know right now, where was that person? When did that person last badge in? It's a huge issue. They need to do a better, you know, HTTP. You got to have HTTPS by default, okay? They could do some sneaky stuff. Not really sneaky, but, you know, you don't want to have your banners so to give everything up. Why do it? Why give up that information? No, make it hard. Make it hard for Shodan. Make it hard for attackers. Hard for Nmap. Make it hard. FTP, Telnet, you know, there's just no place for that, right? I mean, you got to go with encrypted protocols. So for the customers, you need to demand better security from your security products. Okay, I mean, it's a given, right? You expect this. Vendor, reseller, service contractor, you need to hit all of those layers and really push them. And then you really need to manage this like a super critical IT system. When the buildings people come back, the facilities people come back and say, you know, this is our domain, this isn't your domain, we handle the security, the physical security stuff, you say this integration, it's on the network. If it's on the network, that's my house. Welcome to my house. VLANs, MAC authentication, VPNs, restrict IPs, all that classic good stuff. That's it. Thank you very much. And I've got my contact information here. Here's my email. LinkedIn, if you want to get LinkedIn, I love that tool. Please send me a request and I'll add you in. And that's it. So what do we have for questions? Did I go too fast? Okay. So I'll repeat the question, that's okay. The question was, do they use MySQL for everything? There's two versions of that box right now. There's version 2 and version 3. Version 2 uses that MySQL, and yes, everything is added into that MySQL database. Version 3 uses Postgres, and everything is, just like the MySQL, added into that Postgres database. So they have version 4, which is coming out or was recently released, and that uses Postgres too. Okay? Any other questions? Yes, sir.
What about the actual protocol that goes between the device, the door,
So the question was, is the protocol between the actual badge readers, the HID devices, and door access controller itself, if you're able to inject packets to trigger that door to get opened. I haven't done that work, but last year at DEF CON, a gentleman, I can't remember his name right now, but he did publish a tool called Open Sesame, which does do that and does inject that packet. I didn't do that because I didn't have access to a lab environment where I had actual HID readers. The transport medium that does use is over Ethernet. So it's going to be an Ethernet-based protocol, probably proprietary, but I expect that they will be moving towards more standardized. And that kind of gets back to that patent that they, that U.S. patent that they just had issued. Because that's when you get a patent for something, you know, you want to protect your IP, but your intellectual property. But the other thing is they want to sell that technology and get that standardized. But yes, those attacks are out there. Open Sesame is the name of the tool. Yes, sir.
What's your feeling, S2 is among is the worst one, or your feeling is that the other vendors could have been able to create even more shitty stuff?
Oh,
or they are the worst, in your opinion? I mean, I know it's a feeling only, I think.
You know, it's at this point, I honestly couldn't say. You know, if I had three different vendor devices and did a bake-off between them, that would be great. And I could speak more intelligently about that. But at this point, no, this is just what I've seen. But S2 Security is one of the oldest companies in this business. That guy, the CEO, John Moss, he's like the grandfather in this business of physical access control. So some of these other companies who I'm talking to, you know, they came to me and they're like, you know, he's been around forever. And he's the go-to guy for this. So, you know, you can draw your own conclusions from that. But I expect that, you know, you would see these same types of problems. And really where they're going to get hurt is, you know, is not having a patch cycle, is not having a vulnerability management cycle for these. It's that fire and forget. It's that stick it in the closet and forget about it. You know, you don't have to touch this. It's maintenance free. You know, they think just because it's an embedded system and there's no hard drive, there's no, you know, hardware components to fail, that's maintenance-free to them, right? You need to look on the software side as well. That's a really good question, Raul. Thank you. So at this point, yeah, I'd say they probably all are pretty crappy. And break them. Break them. that's my recommendation. And do it ethically, you know, and report the vulnerabilities to, you know, your country's cert. And it'll pay off in the end. You want that white hat designation. I think I'm almost there, but I might have lost it with that public IP question that I answered. Oh. Any other questions? Okay, I'm going to be around, so you know, if you didn't want to speak up or anything, just go ahead and grab me. I'm probably going to grab a cigarette now, but I'll be around, so I'm more than happy to talk to you. Email, everything is great, too. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Great.
Thank you very much, Mr. Melinger. And now, 10-minute break.